Save big money on everything for your painting and staining projects now at Menards. Add beautiful color to your projects with Minwax water-based wood stain. This penetrating stain delivers color that showcases wood grain in one single coat and dries in 1 hour. Get a quart for $15.49 at Menards. Plus, check out Minwax's 2025 Color of the Year, Violet, in-store and on Menards.com. View the weekly flyer for more great deals going on now through February 2nd.
Save big money at Menards.
For the next 20 seconds, picture yourself in a small town. Historic buildings, hip galleries, and a chairlift. Right on Main Street, smack in the middle of town. Now picture yourself on that chairlift. Crisp snowflakes and tall pines gliding beneath your skis. And now you're looking at that small town from the top of the mountain. Hey, is that a moose down there? If you can't wait to find out, you're the mountain kind. And you need to visit Park City, Utah.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
On News Talk.
U.S. President Joe Biden has said that Israel and Hamas are on the brink of a peace deal that would bring a ceasefire to Gaza, which has been, as you know, under relentless bombardment by Israel since the October the 7th attacks. Over 46,500 people have been killed in the enclave, with much of that place reduced to rubble. Now, for analysis on the potential for a deal, we're joined by Gershon Baskin, former Israeli hostage negotiator and Middle East director at International Communities Organization Limited, which is a UK-based NGO. Gershon, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Now, we keep hearing again and again we're on the brink of a deal. This one looks like it might be the real deal.
Yeah, it does seem that way. There's a new target date that's been on the agenda of the Israelis, the Qataris, the Egyptians, and Hamas, which is January 20th, when Donald Trump is sworn into the oath of office in the White House. And Trump let it be known to the world that he wants this war in Gaza ended. He doesn't want it on his table. And now, apparently Prime Minister Netanyahu, the Israeli Prime Minister, takes Trump very seriously because he's apparently made concessions now that he's refused to make for months. The deal that's being done has been on the table since the end of May.
Now, it is a Biden administration-crafted deal. Why would President-elect Trump want to give any credit at all to Biden if it's the Biden deal that gets through?
Well, we've seen something really unprecedented, particularly not expected from Donald Trump, is that his chief emissary to the Middle East, Stephen Witkoff, is fully cooperating with Brett McGurk, Biden's special emissary. They are working together. They've been in Doha together. They traveled to Jerusalem together and met with Prime Minister Netanyahu. I think that both of them will take credit. Of course, Trump will be the incoming president, who everyone says is seeking the Nobel Peace Prize. I'm not sure the ceasefire deal in Gaza will get it for him, but Trump said that he's not going to start new wars. He's going to end old ones. And I say, let him go for it.
So it is the influence of Donald Trump on Netanyahu. And I mean, according to some of the reporting, Trump and his emissary have really put the gun to Netanyahu's head metaphorically and said, end this and end it now before I become president.
I think it's true. I think it's very true because Israel has now made concessions that we hear about. We haven't seen the agreement yet, but we hear that Israel has made concessions that Netanyahu has refused. For many, many months has refused to make them. And it appears that Hamas has also made concessions that they refused to. They were not willing to make any deal that did not guarantee the end of the war. And here they are agreeing to enter into a six-week ceasefire first period during which the negotiations on the second phase will begin on day 16. But I would guess that Trump assured the Egyptians and the Qataris that they could assure Hamas that once this deal gets growing and moving and hostages are released, Palestinian prisoners are released, new aid enters Gaza, the Rafah crossing is reopened, that the deal will continue. Trump will ensure that Israel will stick to the ceasefire.
Now, you have
what concerns me particularly is that we're talking about a deal that will take 3 months to finalize. And during that three-month period, there's a lot of room for breaches and for misunderstandings and for it to be derailed. This whole three-month deal could actually be done in 3 weeks.
Now, you have written yourself, you said, if Hamas had a better understanding of the Israeli public and global politics, The group would make public what it has told the Egyptian and Qatari mediators, that Hamas is ready to release all of the hostages and even end its rule in Gaza on the condition that the war stops, Israel withdraws from Gaza, and Palestinian prisoners are released. And you're saying if that was known to the Israeli public, the pressure on Netanyahu would be phenomenal.
Right. But it's apparently not necessary now that Trump has put the pressure on Netanyahu. What is unfortunate here is that we're talking a deal that's going to take so long to implement. And that's particularly bad for the hostage families who don't know if their loved ones are coming back, what their condition is. We don't know who amongst the first 33 hostages that will be released over a six-week period, how many of them are alive. We know that we're talking about women and children and elderly people sick and wounded. But there will still be another 65 hostages left behind, and we don't know what their condition is either.
Looking at the deal as outlined by the BBC, Hamas would release three hostages on the first day, after which Israel would begin withdrawing troops from populated areas. And then a week later, 7 days later, they'd release four more, and Israel would allow displaced people in the southern part to return to the north, but only on foot and via the coastal road. And then cars and animal-drawn carts and trucks would be permitted to cross through a passage monitored by an X-ray machine and operated by Qatari Egyptian technical security team. And the Israelis would remain in the Philadelphia corridor and maintain an 800-meter buffer zone along the eastern and northern borders during the first phase, which will last all of 42 days. And then Israel, for its part, would release 1,000 Palestinian prisoners. So, I mean, it is a slow, torturous process. And as you say, the opportunity for things to go badly wrong is very evident there.
For the next 20 seconds, picture yourself in a small town. Historic buildings, hip galleries, and a chairlift. Right on Main Street, smack in the middle of town. Now picture yourself on that chairlift. Crisp snowflakes and tall pines gliding beneath your skis. And now you're looking at that small town from the top of the mountain. Hey, is that a moose down there? If you can't wait to find out, you're the mountain kind. And you need to visit Park City, Utah.
Sure. And I think that those aren't all the details of what's being negotiated. I'm not sure that we'll ever see all the details because these kind of things usually include secret annexes that the parties don't want to be shown to their public. But it gets into a very detailed description of to what lines the Israelis are required to withdraw to how big the buffer zone will be. There are still disagreements apparently between Hamas and Israel on the buffer zone, on the mechanism for monitoring the movement of people, on the release of prisoners. Israel is still demanding a veto on the names of some prisoners who are guilty or who have committed crimes of killing many, many Israelis, and Israel doesn't want to release them. There's also an argument of where the prisoners would be released to. Israel would like to deport a large number of those prisoners outside of the area, and of course Hamas doesn't agree to that. So it's not a done deal yet, but it probably will be soon.
Now, the deal, if it is generally agreed and then Netanyahu gives his say-so, does he have to go back to his war cabinet or his full cabinet to get the nod on this?
Right. He has to bring it back to the full government that will vote on it. Netanyahu will have a majority, even if the two right-wing extremist parties vote against it. I seriously doubt that those parties would bolt the government and bring about new elections because they have an interest in staying in government. They've never had positions of power the kind that they enjoy today. So I think that there's no question that Netanyahu will be able to get this through a cabinet vote. He will get the support of the majority of the Israeli public. There will be dissent. There'll be a lot of anger. There'll be anger from the hostage families who want a deal done that returns everyone at once. Nonetheless, what people are saying is every hostage who's freed is an entire universe, and it's important to bring every single one of them out as soon as possible.
Now, Netanyahu's own future then, he, once the war is over, he is vulnerable to the courts in Israel. And although Donald Trump seems to have managed to cobble the courts in the United States as president-elect and in a few days' time president, Donald Trump does not have any influence over the Israeli courts.
No, and Netanyahu's trials for, he was indicted for charges of corruption, have been going on for years already. Netanyahu will prolong those court cases as long as possible. But he's still going to be facing an angry public that's demanding a commission of inquiry to determine how October 7th happened, why the army wasn't there, what the government failed to do prior to October 7th, on October 7th, and after October 7th. And there's a public that wants new elections. This government, although Netanyahu has spiked in the polls recently, it's within his governing coalition. He still does not have enough support in all the polls since last October 7th to create a new majority government. So Netanyahu definitely doesn't want to go to new elections.
Now, the question of his own project, it seems to be to get full control of the West Bank, to effectively annex it as part of Israel. He also wanted to get control over Gaza, didn't want Hamas running the show there. But it's been said that in the absence of the Israelis, when they do evacuate, however much they do evacuate Gaza, who else is to run the show there other than Hamas?
Well, Hamas is not in the position to continue to control Gaza. Hamas knows that as well. There are internal Palestinian discussions taking place in Egypt. The Palestinian Authority in Ramallah is not exactly cooperating. They would like to take over Gaza, but they have no ability to do that. So they're going to have to figure out the Palestinians with the Arab neighbors. Eventually, Israel will have to agree to whatever they agree, as long as Hamas is not going to govern. Hamas is very well aware that, first of all, they lost control of Gaza. The people of Gaza hate them and want them out. And Hamas knows that if they remain in Gaza, not a single dollar of international aid will enter Gaza for reconstruction, which is something that's needed desperately. 80% of the buildings in Gaza have been destroyed. There are over 2 million homeless people in Gaza right now. So reconstruction is something that needs to begin immediately. And they can't wait for Hamas not to be governing there. Hamas has to find some way of exiting and releasing its control over the Gaza Strip.
And there is no doubt, it's maybe a little bit insensitive to talk about it now, but in the reconstruction of Gaza, there will be huge amounts of money to be made by those who get involved in that process.
No doubt. It always happens. And whatever figures, I think the UN said it's $50 billion is required. If the UN is saying 50, we can automatically assume it's going to be $100 billion. And there will be profiteers making money from all of that. But there's nothing we can do about it. You have 2 million homeless people. The one upside of the whole reconstruction of Gaza that I can say is that you don't rebuild refugee camps. So when reconstruction is being done, hopefully they will take into account the need to create a decent quality of life for the people who are living there. They're going to need infrastructure for water and for energy, for electricity, for roads, schools, universities, public buildings. Everything has been destroyed. So it's kind of starting from scrap. They're going to have to bulldoze everything, use the rubble, hopefully to recycle it with some new building materials that can be done. And there'll be a lot of employment for Gazans who need to work and make money and be able to support themselves.
Gershon Baskin, a former Israeli hostage negotiator, Middle East director at the International Communities Organization Limited, which is an NGO based in the UK. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.